new NWSL show mixes the genres of docuseries and reality TV. We'll talk with two of its producers, Angel City FC owner Alexis Ohanian and NWSL star Midge Purse, about why they believe they are creating a new type of sports show that we will see replicated by many others. And the A's may have a place to play next season after all. The city of Oakland is pushing a Coliseum lease extension. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm David Rumsey in for Owen Poindexter, and this is Front Office Sports Today. The ongoing Oakland A's saga has yet another plot twist. Joining me now to unpack the latest drama is my fellow Front Office Sports newsletter writer, Eric Fisher. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
So, as I like to call it, as the A's turn, in today's episode, we have some lease extension drama. Please fill us in on where we are and where we're headed.
So the Coliseum has always been sort of the clubhouse leader and or the clubhouse favorite in terms of where the A's are going to play for the 2025 six and seven seasons while a new Las Vegas ballpark is built. The facility is where the team is obviously now. It's already approved by the union for major league use, and staying where the A's are now allows them to maintain the current terms of their local media rights deal with NBC Sports Bay Area. So there's a lot of good reasons for them to stay there. And the discussions between the team and the city of Oakland are tracking along very much that track, that they would stay for those additional 3 years. The bad news is the unrest around the A's among the fan base is perhaps as bad as it's ever been. You had a protest on opening day. You had four games in the opening homestand against the Guardians that drew collectively those four games less than 27,000 fans. So the turnout is terrible. The feeling toward the team is terrible. The team is terrible on the field. And so it's kind of a good news, bad news situation. So it's, again, the obvious answer that the team would stay there for a lot of very real and significant business reasons, but bad news in the sense that they've got to stay there for these additional 3 years while they're waiting for the Vegas situation to play out.
Yeah. And how unhappy do you think ownership is in Oakland that this situation continues to play out like it is? And even with this extension that might be on the table, it just seems like this is not an ideal scenario for an MLB club.
No, and you get the sense that even the other teams are just not happy with the embarrassment that this situation is causing. It's just a constant run of bad PR for the sport overall. And you've got, again, when you're seeing a major league box score with an attendance number less than 4,000 underneath it, these are just not realistic numbers if you want to have a successful, sustaining major league franchise and one that wins on and off the field. And so it's just a bad situation all around and just really shines a negative light on the entire sport. To the extent that John Fisher and current ownership really care, that's an open question, because if they really cared, you would see different decisions being made in different action. But, you know, it's almost like they feel like this is sort of what's got to happen until they get to the other side and get to the Vegas situation. But it's tough to really know what they're thinking because they've been so reclusive on so many subjects.
And Eric, from a league level, you know, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of MLB, has been very outspoken on this stadium issue and all stadium issues. Where do you think he falls on the situation in Oakland right now and where it could end up by the end of this decade and his tenure?
He kind of put the team on notice a little bit over the winter that if they didn't get this stadium open by 2028 when it's scheduled to open, he'd be really disappointed. And I think he's going to continue to hold the A's feet to the fire on this. Recent events, again, have not been terribly helpful. That you had a set of renderings that seemed to have a lot of holes in them and didn't really inspire a lot of confidence. You've got the current city mayor saying that the site along the Vegas Strip where the current Tropicana Resort is, she says it doesn't work. So I think Manfred's going to continue to hold their feet to the fire. But again, I think on a certain level, he's almost like the same sort of position that this is sort of the cost of admission at this point, that yes, he wants to have a successful stadium project, but the current pain is sort of worth what's potentially coming on the backside, that they gave it all these years trying to work out a bigger stadium deal in Oakland. It didn't happen for a variety of reasons, which we won't bore the listeners with now, but it just, like, he's sort of mentally moved on to the Vegas thing as well.
All right, Eric, great stuff as always. I'm sure we'll have you back on sooner rather than later to talk more A's stadium drama. Thank you, Eric.
All right, have a good one.
Even though Owen is out this week, you can still send him screenshots of your reviews for this show on Apple Podcasts at owen@frontofficesports.com for a chance to win a free Front Office Sports hat. Who doesn't love free merch? In the meantime, I'll be filling in this week alongside my colleague Eric Fisher, and we'll also feature conversations Owen recently had with other folks across the business of sports landscape. Up next, Alexis Ohanian is a serial trailblazer. He's a co-founder of Reddit, which just went public. He is a founding owner of Angel City FC, and now he is a backer of a new show conceived by New Jersey, New York, Gotham FC star Midge Purse, and currently in production. FOS's Owen Poindexter spoke with both of them on what they're up to here and what they think it will mean for the continuing growth of the NWSL. That conversation is next.
All right, very excited to be joined now by Midge Purse, USWNT and Gotham NJNY star, and Alexis Ohanian, founder of 776 and lead investor of Angel City FC. Welcome, Midge. Welcome, Alexis.
Thank you.
Thanks, Owen.
Great to have you both. So you two are collaborating on a reality show called The Offseason. It's sort of like the real world NWSL edition, where you've got 11 players living together during the NWSL offseason. You're going to turn that into a reality show. How did this vision come together?
The idea came a couple of years ago when I was looking for a place to train in the offseason because, you know, I play in the New Jersey, New York area, and it's really difficult to run around outside, do your conditioning, find good trainers, find other players to play with on the same schedule as you. And in having conversations with Alexis, he kind of was just like, well, then why don't you do something about it? And we had a conversation about it, and the best possible thing to do is like go to Miami with your friends. So I called a lot of my friends around the league and I said, would you come down and train? And they were like, no, why would I come across country just to train? And in a lot of conversations with Alexis, we talked about what would be the most optimal training environment for the athletes. Like, what could we get that would actually be compelling for everyone to come down? So the number one and the biggest thing was a trainer, a really good trainer. So I convinced my trainer to leave all of his MLS players and his USL boys to come train us down in Florida. And then we hooked it up with like a great just environment. We had chefs, we had massage therapists and PTs. And when I went back to my friends and asked them about it, they couldn't say no. And then, so that's kind of the first part. But the second part of the actual show and the docuseries is just that our league has stars that have been overlooked because they're not on the international stage. And truthfully, it's a travesty to know that there's so much talent and so many incredible stories that are just not told because there's no exposure for them. So the idea of doing a television docu reality series kind of came naturally since, you know, these are women who are incredible in sport, but they're also really, really incredible storytellers and really, really fascinating to watch.
And I feel like with this sort of thing, you know, some athletes, and it seems like it's somewhat sports specific and league specific, some people really want to be part of a show like this, and it feels like we almost have one per league now. And some, in some cases, like with Netflix and Quarterback, they're struggling to find, you know, more folks to bring into that show. How would you say, is there like a general attitude that NWSL players have towards this kind of exposure?
I don't think there's a general attitude, to be honest, because it's never been done before. And the tricky part is it's never been done on the men's side either. You've never seen a group of professional male athletes all together in one house training together. You don't get to see their interpersonal relationships, the struggles they go through in terms of getting traded, getting new contracts and salaries and all that stuff. No one gets to see that. So in kind of trying to make people comfortable with the concept, that was a really difficult part of it. And people had different reactions. One of the girls, when they came in that the first night, they wanted to leave that night. Like, they didn't want to stay. And I had to convince them to stay for the rest of the 2 weeks. And by the end of it, they were like, I'm so glad I did. This was an incredible experience. But no, I think it's really specific to each player. And I hope that after this series comes out, there will be a more general positive reaction to it.
Yeah. And Alexis, you said, you know, I just wire the money. But even if that's all you're doing, you know, as an investor, you got to make choices. Why was this a good choice for you?
Look, in 2019, I rage tweeted about how undervalued women's sports was. It was March, and it was simply because the Seattle team had just sold for like $3 million. And I didn't know anything about women's soccer, but I knew Megan Rapinoe's name, and I knew she was on that team, and I knew her sort of value, her brand value or marketing value was at least worth that much a year. And so it made no sense to me. The math did not math. And so what was clear was that the folks running things just weren't necessarily thinking about building a business. This led me to, of course, fund and Get Angel City started with the three women behind it. And I just thought, okay, let's look at sports stocks. I, like everyone, have gotten obsessed with Formula One because they made a dozen dudes who race in cars with helmets for a couple hours interesting dynamic humans. And then I'm thinking, well, wait, okay. We have all these sports docuseries now. And what is a docuseries, but it's unscripted television? That's the lingo I learned. And then again, I thought about it from first principles. If I were designing the ultimate docuseries about sports, I would look at what have been the most successful unscripted shows of all time. And you start looking down that list, and what do you notice? They're all featuring women, unequivocally. It's just women, 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 women. And both men and women enjoy watching it, but all of the most successful ones have always featured women. So as Midge is describing this, I'm frankly just shocked no one's done it before. Because if you take this format of unscripted television, which we know is powerful, compelling, interesting, and it just so happens the women who are featured are athletes, you now have a whole different format to something that for the last, you know, decade, people have thought was this second coming of content. And what I'm most excited about is it just clicks in so many obvious ways. And I think what Midge has done, creative directing this, what all the women who participated have done in telling their stories is going to create a new format. I really hope part of the success of Offseason FC is going to be measured by the fact there's going to be a dozen other people trying to do their versions. None will do it as well. But I do hope it kicks off something that will seem very obvious in hindsight, which is, you know, why weren't people telling these stories? Because we know that women are just so much better at being the focal points for this kind of television. It's the same reason why women's sports excites me in general. And you don't have to look too far on social media to see the numbers, right? In terms of follower counts, in terms of engagement, like this new generation of athlete that is digital native, the women are kicking the men's ass. You're finally seeing it right now in the NCAA basketball tournaments. Like, more and more people are coming to terms with this and realizing it. But it's been a lot of fun being, again, a small part in this. And it's, if you spend any time with Midge or frankly any of the women of the offseason, it's very obvious why you want to pay attention and invest.
And yeah, you mentioned Drive to Survive. That's kind of like the big example of a series that turbocharged a league. And now, you know, there's a bunch of copycats kind of along those lines, not to, you know, downplay them or anything. A lot of them are really good. But this feels new in that you're kind of setting up the dynamics of the show. It's not just we're following you around with a camera and you just try to do what you'd be doing anyway. And we'll pull you aside from some testimonials here and there. This is like you've got the house. Maybe you were going to, you know, do this house of athletes anyway, but it feels like the show and the setup are kind of going together here. And that to me feels new. Do you feel like this is going to be the next thing that people are going to copy?
From my perspective, my job as a team owner is to make sure we tell the stories of our athletes every minute they're not actually on the pitch, because that is where fandom is built in 2024. And that's partially my fault, I guess, for social media. It's where the new generation fan is paying attention, right? It's on the podcast, it's in the Meta, it's in all the other things. And what Midge has come up with here is a format that does a better job than anything I've seen before to do that work, to tell that story. And then as an added bonus, you're giving people something they've never really gotten the chance to see, which is women athletes having the range of dynamism that male athletes tend to only be afforded. I think we're going to see this new era of women athletes, not just as like icons or role models, but like all the things as extreme competitors, as pranksters, as humans. And that ends up just being really interesting, different, novel, great storytelling.
And just the fact that you two are working together feels, I mean, you see this a bit with MLS. They're the newer, younger leagues, I feel like, are just willing to do things that you probably wouldn't see in like the NFL. Like, it's hard to imagine, you know, like Robert Kraft doing a show with, you know, whoever, Kirk Cousins or, you know, someone.
And it would be boring. And I love Kirk. Kirk's my boy. Kirk, you know, I love you, man. But like, it's just, I don't know. I did enjoy him in Quarterback. Like, I think a lot of folks did. But what folks haven't realized is there is so much more there. And I don't know. Are we not allowed to share? Are you allowed to share any of the stories or any of the things that went down?
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm allowed to. It's ours. I can share it. I'm not going to, though.
Yeah, who are you going to ask permission to?
Oh, so you're not going to. That's what I meant. Okay, so Mitch isn't going to let me tell the stories. But there's just so much more there.
It's, I think what's really cool about it is that you really don't see this side of sports anywhere. Like, when someone gets traded in the NBA, you don't get to see what that process is like, what the player actually goes through in those conversations, you know, the mental gymnastics you jump through of moving all of your stuff, or if you're in contract negotiations, or if you're getting back from injury. All of those things are behind closed doors in the entirety of the sports world right now. So even if you take a step back and you go, okay, women are interesting, women do really, really well in unscripted television, it's a completely new storyline for sports in general. So I think that part's going to be really exciting to see as well.
That's what it is. It's the moment in time where there's this huge gap between the excitement, the energy, and the fandom, which has long been there, and the investment, which is now catching up, and the like professionalization of leagues, the leveling up of all these things that's happening right now, that just isn't, it's not happening when you're already the most, when you're the NFL, like the cake is baked. And this is a really interesting dynamic that exists in women's football, and, you know, maybe down the road, off seasons and other sports, that makes this extra compelling.
Yeah, and along those lines, how do you think this new media deal with the NWSL, with, you know, CBS, ESPN, Amazon, Scripps, how is that going to change the league?
I can speak to it a little bit in my capacity as an owner. It's a little trickier, but I do think, okay, when I first got a team, I think the NWSL was still on Lifetime. And I was like, well, okay, I know why no one's watching this. It's great to see the progress, for sure, but this is just the start. This comes back to attention and how do we as storytellers capture as much attention for as long as we can about our players. And that's, to me, that's the North Star. Like I said, no one cares about the owners. No one cares about the logos of the teams. No one cares about any of the humans involved other than the actual players. They're the ones who put it all out there. And our responsibility is to do the best job possible elevating those stories, because then we all succeed.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that, because I think Angel City FC was probably the first team where, I mean, the owners were the first sort of people involved with the team. But I remember seeing the promo video of, you know, here's this new team and here are all our owners coming in. And it was just like, I mean, you could have made a movie with those people, and you did with that promo video, I guess. But would you say that's, you know, maybe the most stacked ownership group in sports?
Probably, but again, like, we needed to tell a story out the gate, because at that time, no one was investing in teams in this way. I had so many people when I announced this investment, I was like, all right, I did it. I got a team putting millions of dollars to work. I can't tell you how many people privately in my world of finance were just shocked. And these are the same people who showed up for like a pickleball team a year or two later. And I was like, really, really y'all? And now, yes, it looks very different, but again, I can't stress enough, like, yeah, that was needed to do some storytelling, to get some attention and get some excitement and get those first brand partnerships and everything else. But like, the only reason this league will be successful is because of the players, full stop. No one should care. No one is going to stay late like these amazing fans do, lining up to get autographs, lining up to get selfies of anyone other than the players. Like, this always has to be about them. And what I love about this story, and I'm glad you brought it up, is there's really only an elite group of professional athletes that have simultaneously been at the top of their game and also creating like media empires. But I can think of LeBron, and I guess now Midge, and it's I think this also goes to show, and no offense, LeBron, he's an older gentleman, he's my age. this also goes to show how the new generation of athlete is taking control of so much more than just their play, and I think it's a role model, it's a prototype, and that's what Midge is.
Alexis, if you could own a piece or whatever majority of any sports team out there, take your pick, any league, who are you going after?
Let's see. So Angel City, LA Golf Club. I don't know. I you know what? I'll announce something later this year.
Oh yeah.
And then you'll know what the next one will be.
Okay.
I grew up in the DC area, and it would be majority stake. Actually, Josh is doing a fine job with the Commanders. I got, now that Dan Snyder's gone, everyone's better off.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I think I have Gotham. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah. Is that too shameless?
Absolutely not.
All right. So there you go.
We reject your offer.
Oh, yeah, no.
I mean, I think you have to sell Angel City if you want Gotham.
All right.
I mean, I think the Nationals are going to go up for sale in, I don't know, 6 months to a year. So again.
Wait, the Nats? Like baseball Nats?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. My buddy David just got the Orioles, and I was never a baseball guy. It was American football was the only thing that was the only sport that mattered as a kid. But I'm paying attention. Let's just say I'm paying attention even more in women's sports, and you'll see when I make my next move.
All right. Well, that'll be a fun parlor game for the rest of us. Another quick game. We'll see how this one goes. I'll name a few leagues. Tell me like any change you would like to see. It can be like a serious one, a goofy one, whatever. We'll start with NBA/WNBA. What's something you would like to see happen in one of those leagues?
I would love for Adam to spin out the WNBA and then give me a call.
All right. And what would that call entail? Like, do you want to run this league or what are you thinking?
I don't need to run it, but that is, if it's not been abundantly clear, you know, what the NCAA has shown in the last couple of years. Remember, they didn't even give the women a weight room 3 years ago, 4 years ago. They couldn't even say March Madness. Like, keep these receipts. I've got all the tweets. Like, it was so embarrassingly bad. And who are the only people folks are paying attention to during this March Madness? It's the women. And we've been calling this one for years now. Again, follow the social media accounts. Look at where the followers are. Look at where their attention is. You have some generational talent. And what's going to happen when they go pro? And I think it's a huge, huge opportunity. That's having the NWSL be a separate entity from the MLS for all of the problems it's caused in the past, I think is one of the reasons why I was most excited to get involved, because we could just get shit done. It's a different sport. But that's my hot take.
All right. Finish us off here. I want your favorite Serena highlight.
Let's see, wifey's favorite. Definitely winning Australia with Olympia in her belly. Come on. Hands down. That's if you ever, and my favorite quote from that was, to this day, she knew Olympia was a girl because only a girl could have been tough enough to deal with that 110 degree heat like she did. So I love thinking back about that because Olympia is definitely pretty awesome. So shout out to Olympia and her mama's belly.
Mitch Purse, Alexis Ohanian, really enjoyed the chat. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Owen.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.